our silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Well, today we go from cemeteries to piers in the middle of a lake or on the edge of a lake. Interesting, interesting cases. Are you prepared to proceed? I will call the second case, Myers versus the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Please begin.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Matthew Biegert. Mr. Myers, who is a riparian owner, is also present here today. Back when Terry and Phil Myers purchased their property, they wanted to build a new pier to replace the remnant unusable pier that was in place. They applied for a permit. After extensive negotiations with the DNR, including a contested case hearing, they were granted a permit to build a 70-foot rock crib pier in Lake Superior off Madeline Island. For those who don't know, and I did not know before I became involved, a rock crib pier is a pier that, rather than resting on pilings, rests in part on cribs built out of what looks like maybe Lincoln logs filled with rocks, so there is a more sturdy presence to rest the pier on. And that's what supports this pier, and that's what supports most or all piers up on Lake Superior.
Council, are pier permits permits of construction or permits of possession?
I believe they are permits of construction because of the way the statute is worded. It is a statute that gives the applicant power to place a pier on a navigable waterway. It doesn't talk about the power to maintain a pier. Presumably that is implicit if you have a permit to lawfully place a pier and have done so pursuant to the permit lawfully. So the pier was built in 2001. 12 years went by without issue. After 12 years, a neighbor complained to DNR. DNR came out, did an investigation by Gene Clark. Gene Clark came back after this one visit and said that in this one visit at a time that there was gale warnings and 9 to 13 foot waves, and said in his report, it is extremely difficult to estimate how much, if any, additional littoral material trapping is occurring due only to the new pier structure. That determination would require much detailed coastal analysis, which may include modeling and sequential on-site beach and nearshore depth measurements. So, essentially, and I don't know, there is an issue, whether it is a temporary issue, whether it is an issue that is caused by the piers of the beach starvation, or that not enough sand is accreting to the beach, but I can't tell what is caused by it.
And do the neighbors have a right to have land accrete to their property?
I don't think that is what would be termed a riparian right. Riparian rights are set forth by statute and by rule fairly specifically, and in fact, there is a DNR administrative code provision that specifically talks about how to go about and determine whether there has been interference with riparian rights, and that's NR 32607. And so the right to that is not a riparian right, rather that would serve as a basis, for example, for a private nuisance claim or something, is beyond what we're looking at here, whether they may have some other sort of right to that.
Is this at all moot? There's a lot of damage around Lake Superior, I think, in the last couple of years with regard to piers. And wasn't there damage? Does this pier still exist?
This pier still exists. This pier was damaged, but it certainly isn't moot. And I would point the court specifically to Section 3012, paren 1K, paren E, close paren, which says that when a valid permit exists, if there's been damage, the owner has a right to rebuild the pier without any additional permitting requirements. And so depending on the outcome of the case, to the extent that there has been damage, it will be repaired in accordance with the terms of their permit. In any event, they received a letter from DNR saying that we want you to take out 48 feet of this 70-foot pier or remove the supports from 48 feet of this pier so that the water can pass under it. And he took it to the builder who built the pier, and the builder said that's not going to be stable. You can't do that. And this is in the record from the public hearing that was held. And so they hired a lawyer, and we've been at it for the last 5 years and getting up here. We asked for a review, judicial review, that was initially denied. Eventually, DNR applied itself for an amendment to my client's permit, and after a public informational hearing, chose to grant the amendment to itself, or I guess to the Myers, even though they hadn't applied for it. That was petitioned for judicial review up to the circuit court. The circuit court determined that these exemptions that we're going to talk about in a minute applied, but there were factual issues about whether the exceptions to the exemptions might apply specifically to the Myers Pier, and asked that it be remanded. Both parties petitioned to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals determined that it didn't reach the issue of whether these exemptions applied, but said that even if they did, the DNR had made implicit fact-finding after the informational hearing that would support the application of the exceptions to the exemptions, and therefore the Myers Pier was not protected, which brings us here. There's history. That history has been briefed about regulation of piers in Wisconsin. That has been a particularly contentious issue over the last 10 to 15 years. Back in 2007, Wisconsin Act 204 was passed, which created exemptions for piers that had been in place for a certain period of time, a grandfather exemption, also an enforcement exemption. That did not quell the problems and the controversies with DNR's enforcement, or some would say over-enforcement, of pier regulations, particularly in the northern part of the state. And in 2011, Wisconsin Act 167 was passed, which greatly simplified and expanded those exemptions and provided protections from landowners against aggressive DNR enforcement of pier regulations.
So if I understand your argument, it basically is that the DNR has authority to authorize a permit in the first instance, but it cannot reserve the right to later modify how a pier should be constructed, right?
Close. It is that, and it would differ between what it can do now and what is relevant with respect to piers that received these permits back before April of 2012. Right now, they can grant a permit for a pier. They can have conditions. I believe that under certain circumstances, they may be able to modify a permit granted today. But I think that any modification of a pier, any order by the DNR requiring the applicant to change the configuration or size of the pier would be an enforcement action. So, yes, I don't want to phrase this as a question of whether the DNR has the power to do it. But there is an issue of whether they have the power to do it with respect to piers which pre-existed 2012. And there is an issue of whether their power to do it is an enforcement action, which is circumscribed in many cases.
I'm not saying that they're without any authority. Can they reserve the right in the first issuance of the permit in this instance to later come in and modify the pier?
To the extent that they have the power to do so under the law, then they cannot create the power for themselves if they don't have it. To the extent that they have the power under, for example, 30.03 in the public trust doctrine, yes, they can put that in. That language actually tracks 30.209.5.2, which gives them the power to modify a pier permit, at least during the construction of the permit, before it's completed.
So if a pier is not functioning the way people might have intended it to, in this instance, this case, what would be the avenue of relief for them?
For who?
For anyone who complains about the way the pier is working.
For third parties who are not constrained by these exemptions, they may have the ability to bring some sort of public or private nuisance action. So they may have the power to do something. We're not here talking about what powers the neighbors may have with respect to this. With respect to DNR, DNR does not have any power to do anything about this pier under Chapter 30 as long as the exceptions to the exemptions don't apply, and the exceptions to the exemptions don't apply in this instance. Whether DNR or another governmental entity may have power to do something outside of the scope of Chapter 30 if it really posed a hazard to navigation or a danger, again, we're not here whether there may be powers that exist outside of Chapter 30. DNR can also go back to the legislature if they think that the legislature has unfairly constrained its ability to regulate piers. And I suppose in an appropriate case, DNR could proceed under eminent domain if they really thought that extinguishing the property rights was that critical and they needed to get it.
But you had a right to a hearing is what you're complaining about, and then this was done on the DNR's own hook without a fact-finding hearing at which your client could present evidence, correct?
We don't even get to the hearing until we determine the exemptions don't apply, unless it's a hearing for the purpose of deciding whether the exceptions to the exemptions apply.
Right.
So from the standpoint of determining whether the exceptions to the exemptions apply, yes, we were entitled to a hearing. We were entitled to a de novo hearing, de novo trial, as the law existed at that time. However, I don't think the court needs to reach that because I think that those exemptions apply as a matter of law and the fact-finding isn't required. No factual findings were made by DNR relating to exceptions to the exemptions, and the Court of Appeals found implicit fact-finding when there was none. There was certainly no explicit fact-finding, and the facts that were found are not enough to carry the burden on specifically what's required to show the exceptions, the exemptions.
Okay, but my question goes back a little bit further than that. Are you asking for a hearing?
I am asking the court to find that the exemptions apply.
As a matter of law without any further fact-finding anywhere?
Correct.
Okay.
If the court were to find that they do not apply, and that there's a factual issue as to whether the exceptions to the exemptions apply, then I would be asking for a trial de novo.
Okay. Thank you.
How does Chapter 30, specifically 30.03, play into this? You indicated you didn't believe that DNR had any authority under Chapter 30. Wouldn't they be able to proceed under 30.03? And the more appropriately they should proceed under that statute in your mind?
DNR has authority as a matter of general law to proceed under Chapter 30.03. In this specific case, it is constrained by both the grandfather and the enforcement exemptions. And jump and talk about specifically what the language is. The language with respect to the grandfather exemption, that's 30.12 paren 1K paren B close paren, says that a riparian owner of a pier that was placed on the bed of a navigable waterway before April 17, 2012 is exempt from the permit requirements under this section unless either the department notified them in advance of an August 2012 date that the pier was detrimental to the public interest or that the pier interferes with the rights of riparian owners. And that 30.03, and I would say any action under the permit requirements under Chapter 30 is going to be barred because this was grandfathered. This was a pier that was in place prior to April 2012, that they had not been notified prior to the August 2012 date that there was any detriment to the public interest by its continued placement there after more than a decade, and there's not been any showing that it interferes with the riparian rights of the riparian owners, and it is not present in the record that such a finding was made that would support the DNR's action in this matter. So because this pier is grandfathered, no, the DNR cannot take action under 3003. Similarly,
Council,
yes.
The provision you referred to, subparagraph E, referring to a riparian owner who's exempt under paragraph B from the permit requirements under this section, I'm wondering, for a pier that already exists and must exist to qualify for the exemption, what specific permit requirements is this exempting that person from?
It is exempting them from any permit requirements if their pier existed prior to that date.
Right. So what kind of requirements in this section would that refer to?
It would refer to the requirement of having a permit and operating within the language of that permit.
So does that, earlier we talked about whether this is a permit of construction or a permit of possession. If that's the case, doesn't that suggest this is a permit of possession as opposed to construction?
It doesn't to me. What it means is that the permit had been placed, and let's take an example, which isn't the example from this case. Let's say that the Myers had gotten the permit but had gone out and placed a 75-foot permit out there. So they had a permit, but they were not in compliance with it. That would still be grandfathered. And if they had built that permit in that fashion, in that configuration before that date, and had never received any notice that it's causing anyone's problems and it's not interfering with riparian rights, then they are not obligated to follow the terms of the permit because they are exempt from the permit requirements. Just like, for example, if some vehicle was exempt from vehicle registration, the fact that they had gone out on one occasion and gotten a vehicle registration anyway would not require them in perpetuity to register their vehicle. The language is very clear, and not only is the language very clear, but in addition, the legislative history is provided by Wisconsin Legislative Council Information Memorandum on Act 167 makes it clear that piers that were present before that date are exempt from the permit requirements of 3012. So, again, that is not going to create a situation where people with permits are going out and doing anything untoward because it's only for permits that had been, or for piers that had been placed prior to 2012. They can't go out in 2015 or 2018 and say, well, we have a permit, but we don't have to follow the permit conditions, so we can make it 8 feet longer, 10 feet wider, because that permit, as they are, or that pier, as they are constructing it, didn't exist in 2012. All that is grandfathered is what was there, what was placed prior to 2012. And if what was placed there prior to 2012 hasn't been altered, then it is grandfathered. And if it is grandfathered, then they need to show that there has been some interference with riparian rights in order to get around the grandfathering, and they don't. Briefly going in back to Judge Dallet's question, there also cannot proceed under 3003 or under any enforcement because of the prohibition under the enforcement exemption, which is 3012 paren 1K paren CM. And that indicates that a structure for which the department has issued a permit, if the structure is in compliance with the permit, is exempt from enforcement action. And while these overlap, these are two separate things. The enforcement exemption covers piers that have valid permits. Whether those piers were put in before or after 2012, they are exempt under paren CM. The grandfathering exemption applies to piers that were in place before 2012, again, regardless of whether permitted or unpermitted. The language makes no differentiation. So you are going to get some overlap, like you do in this case, where you have a structure that has a valid permit and predates 2012, but they are not duplicative. They cover two different subsets of piers, but there may be piers which fall into both subsets.
If this permit were issued in 2014, would you lose?
If this permit was issued in...
Prior to 2012, that's why I chose 2012.
Yes, if it was issued subsequent to 2012, we would obviously not be grandfathered. You would then have to go to the enforcement exemption, which says, are we exempt because the department has issued a permit if the structure is in compliance? So the issue would then be, are we in compliance with the permit? I believe we would have an argument that we are in compliance with the permit because the permit contains no specific terms about how it is built or how long it is or what times of year it can be put in the water or whether it's permanent or anything that we are in violation of. The permit doesn't even have conditions like this pier can cause no littoral drift or else it's subject to removal. It simply has a non-substantive portion of the permit and the permit language, which says it is subject to modification or renewal, which again tracks 30.2095 paren 2. In my view, if we are compliant with the permit for a permit that was after 2014, then enforcement is barred. Again, that's not the case before this body and not one that it has to decide in order to make a decision here. I want to talk briefly about the DNR's power. And again, we talked about the exemptions, but there is also the power. What does DNR have the power to do? And DNR has made the argument that, well, we can, even if we have no statutory right or administrative right to modify this permit without following certain hoops that we have to jump through and now showing things, we can essentially, by putting language in the permit that says we have the right to modify or rescind at any time based on good cause, that by us granting ourselves the power in the permit, that trumps all of the procedures that are present in statute or in administrative code. And that simply is not the case. The DNR does not have the ability to grant itself power that it doesn't already possess. There is a well-thought-out and structured process for how modifications to permits are made, and modifications to permits are not made by some procedure that the DNR creates and makes up for itself. Modification to permits are done either by 30.2095 parent 2 if you believe that that provides a procedure. If that's only providing the power to DNR, then the procedure to follow is the 30.034 procedure in terms of how the department would go about enforcing a change. And when we talk about the enforcement exemption, what else is it going to apply to if it doesn't apply to actions like this to modify or rescind the permit pursuant to the terms of the permit or pursuant to 2095 parent 2? There is no other action, enforcement action, that would be barred or limited by the enforcement exemption. It's not going to be in place to protect somebody against fines because you have a, it only applies if you have a valid permit. It's not going to be in place to require, to prevent anything other than DNR going into somebody with a valid permit that they're in compliance with and saying, nope, we're going to make you take out your pier. We're going to make you modify your pier in this way without going through the enforcement exception. That is an enforcement action. When you tell somebody, here is an order, and this is an order that my clients were given, you need to tell us in 30 days what changes you're making. You have, I'll go back and look at it, 180 days, some period of time to do those. And if you don't, then you are subject to fines and, although I'm sure it rarely happens, subject to 6 months imprisonment under Chapter 3012. I see my light is on. Unless anybody has any questions, I'll sit down.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Assistant Attorney General Gabe Johnson Karp for the Department of Natural Resources. Last term, this Court reaffirmed a fundamental principle to the placement of structures and piers in navigable waters. The Court said the right to place these structures is subordinate and qualified and subject to the paramount interest of the state and of the public and riparian owners.
Counsel, near the end of opposing counsel's argument, I think he answered the question I probably inartfully asked him at the beginning of his argument. I'm going to ask you the same question. What gives the DNR, and hopefully a little better than I might have asked it the first time, what gives the DNR the authority to as they did in sub 1, amend or rescind the pier permit, if they so choose? Where do they get that ability to put that authority in the permit?
So I think it's important to clarify for the Court that in this case, the Department had two separate avenues of authority to issue the amendment that it did here. And I'll answer Your Honor's question with regard to the condition first. The condition, which clearly states that the department has the authority to modify the permit upon the circumstances changing, that comes directly from Wisconsin Statute 3012, sub 3MD2. And in 3MD2, the legislature has authorized the department to promulgate rules and to create conditions in furtherance of those rules, and the department has done so through Wisconsin Administrative Code, Chapter NR 326.
Where is the rule that says you can do, DNR can do what it did with the condition it put on the permit?
So 3012-3M-D2
right.
Is the legislative grant to Make impose
rules.
The conditions.
Right. That's a general grant of authority, but I think everybody, or at least several of us, are concerned about where's the specific authority of the DNR to condition a permit that you issue. You have to have the authority to do it or you can't do it.
And so in NR 326...
But that's for the issuance of the permit. This permit was issued.
Right. So is Your Honor's question, where's the authority to impose an ongoing condition?
Right. Where's the authority to say, hey, we're going to issue this permit, but guess what? We can amend it, rescind it, do whatever we want in the future so long as we think that we should do that. Where does the DNR get that broad grant of authority to sort of say, yeah, you can have this, but we could pull it back at any time?
So going back to 3012-3MD2, the legislature has authorized conditions in furtherance of the criteria under, again, 3012, I believe it's 3012-3MC1-3. And the nature of these conditions demonstrate an ongoing compliance, that these aren't going to be absolutely satisfied permanently upon the placement of the structure.
Counsel, is there a difference between a statutory authorization to create conditions upon which permits may be issued on the one hand, and on the other, a statutory authority to create conditions that would include conditions included in the permit? You see what I'm saying? You've got a recursion issue here.
Well, if I'm understanding Your Honor's question correctly, is it that did the department need an additional legislative authorization to impose an ongoing condition?
Right.
I think that would be an unduly fine reading of the authorization that the conditions...
Let me suggest a way in which it might not be an unduly fine way of reading it. So on the one hand, you have the statutory authority to say you can condition the issuance of permits. So you develop your conditions, right? You say you must do A, B, and C, and if you do those three things, you get your permit. That's the way the statute appears to read to me. The way you're reading it is, okay, you do A, B, and C, you get your permit, but your permit's going to include a condition itself, which is I can revoke it any time I want. Do you see the difference between those?
I see the difference, and I think the bottom line is that the conditions that are contemplated under 3012 contemplate an ongoing authority.
Okay. Show me in the statute where that's the case.
So 3012-3MC, 1 through 3. These are the criteria that the legislature has referred to.
But those criteria relate to the issuance of permits, as Justice Ziegler pointed out earlier.
So the nature of what these criteria look at it is something that in a literally fluid environment is not going to be the same on the day that the permit is installed versus... for example, 10 years down the road. So the fact that a pier might not be detrimental to the public interest on the day that it's installed does not eliminate the authority to regulate that pier. The pier needs to continue to be non-detrimental to the public interest forever.
So let's stress test that a little bit. It may be prudent to say that there needs to be an ongoing obligation to meet the three criteria in 3MC, but what C actually says is the department shall issue an individual permit upon a finding that all of the following requirements are met, past tense. Yeah? So if the owner can satisfy those three criteria, then DNR issues the permit. It's required to do so, correct? All right.
That's right.
So Past tense, DNR has found that those conditions have been satisfied. Now, point me to any language that says, and if that ever changes, we can revoke your permit or change it.
Well, just as a factual matter, I'd like to sort of clear the record that there's been no discussion of rescinding a permit, revoking a permit. We're squarely
amendment. In amendment.
Amendment.
Yeah.
So it's not quite as dire as the petitioners suggest. But the fact that the legislature in D2 has authorized the establishment of reasonable conditions to implement those criteria, I think the fairest reading of these criteria and how you implement these criteria on the ground is not one that ceases immediately upon placement.
Okay. So what you're asserting then, if I understand you correctly, is that the statute implies that the peer permits are permits of possession, not just of construction.
I think more than that statute implies that. I think the entire tenor of Chapter 30 indicates an ongoing applicability of these peer permits.
Show me the rest of Chapter 30 that implies that it's a permit of possession.
Sure. So in 3012, 1K E, the legislature has laid out what peer owners can do if they are entitled to one of the exemptions in the preceding sections. One of those exemptions, the enforcement exemption, refers to permitted peers. So what E is telling us is that owners of permitted peers can do certain things. The certain things that they can do include to repair, to maintain, to reconstruct, to reconfigure. So all of these illustrate that it's not something that you do on day zero or it's gone. These demonstrate that the legislature was contemplating a system whereby the permit continues to govern that structure indefinitely.
I'm missing that. Okay, so you're under 1K.
1K E.
E. All right.
And
we're talking about riparian owner who's exempt from the permit requirements, right?
Or who is exempt under paragraph CM. And so CM 1 refers to a structure for which the department has issued a permit under this section if the structure is in compliance. So what CM 1 does is, or I should say what E sub E does, is to bring in those permitted peers that are exempted from enforcement.
Right. And so if you're operating under CM 1, you have a permit. And the question is whether you're in compliance with the permit. Yeah? And the permit said, before you got the permit says you got to do A, B, and C. And you do that, you get to build your pier. Yeah? So why does that imply, why does it necessarily imply an ongoing permit requirement? That is to say that you have to have continued permission from the DNR to have your permit. Why does this not just refer back in time? Let's go in the way back machine and find out what did your permit require and did you comply with that? Right? Isn't that what CM1 is referring to?
So I would dispute the premise that there's some sort of ongoing proof that peer owners have to meet to the department. That there's no requirement that peer owners present something to the department on an annual or any sort of basis, and that's really, I think, the
point. All right, don't let me distract you with that then. So just isn't CM1 referring to getting in the Wayback Machine, going back and saying, did you build consistently with the permit? Right? Isn't that what it's saying?
Well, I think that necessarily implies that there is a permit. And if that permit exists, then that permit continues to apply to the peer.
Why is that?
I think that's the legislative structure that's contemplated here, is that once you get a permit, it doesn't disappear. There's no statutory basis for the suggestion that the permit or any of its conditions at some point disappeared.
Yeah. Okay. So let's compare this to a regular building permit.
I'm sorry?
A regular building permit, you want to build a house, right? And there are conditions that are placed on it. You've got to meet these codes and whatnot. And if you do, you're okay. Right? So you get you pull the permit, you go and you build the house. It's constructed. Does the building inspector have the right to come back and amend the terms of that permit?
There's a fundamental distinction between building on your property and building on public navigable waters.
Okay, let's get to that later. So first off, is that a thing in our statutes that a building inspector or the relevant municipality could come back and say, you know what, that permit that we issued, that's a continuing permit. That's a permit of possession, not construction. We can amend that permit anytime we want to if we think it's a good idea. Is that a thing? Can municipalities do that?
The department wouldn't take a position as to what municipalities can do, but I think what is clear is that as to public trust land owned by the public, that we're operating under a different structure than a permit on somebody's personal property. We're talking about the department's ongoing.
Yeah, and if that's true, I would expect to see some difference in the language, right? Shouldn't there be something in the way that this statute is constructed from the statute that controls house building permits? Shouldn't there be something here that expressly says this is a possession permit and we can amend it at any time in the life of the year?
Again, I think throughout the statutes you see indications. There's, to be sure, no plain statement that pure permits are a possession permit. I'll grant the court that.
So here's where I'm trying to pin you down a little bit then, is you say that the spirit of the statute implies that this is a continuing possession permit as distinguished from a home building permit. And you say the difference is because this is, you know, we're dealing with riparian issues. But you say that this is in the statutes, that we can discern this from the statutes, not from the fact that we're dealing with riparian issues, but from the statutes. So what I want to see is where in the statutes is this different from any other statute that governs the construction of a thing?
So additional examples include the violation provisions. So 30.153 suggests that a violation, or rather a structure that's placed is without a permit, is in violation for each day that it's in existence without a permit. So the necessary implication is that by obtaining a permit, even after the pier has been placed, the owner can avoid that liability. Additionally, in the...
Right, because he got a permit to place it.
I'm sorry?
Because he got a permit to place it, right? I mean, that's what an individual permit allows you to do. So under 3MA, a riparian owner may apply to the department for the individual permit that is required under sub 1 in order to place the structure for the owner's use or to deposit the material. It's just a question of placement.
But the fact that the permit can and is required after the structure is placed.
That's your implication. What I'm trying to figure out is what part of the statute leads you to that implication.
So another example is that the exemptions provision under 3012, so 3012-1G outlines a number of exemptions for which a permit wouldn't be required for a certain structure. If that structure is placed under an assumption that it's subject to an exemption, under 2M, the department is authorized to make a determination of requiring a permit in lieu of an exemption. So even though this structure is placed, a permit is nonetheless required for that structure. So we're not talking about a purely construction and installation type of permit. The determination that a permit makes is that this structure will not, or rather will, meet those criteria in 3MC 1 through 3. So there has to be...
The tense of the language is a little bit problematic for you, though, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
The tense of the language is a little problematic for that proposition. The tense of the language is past perfect. It did meet. It doesn't speak to future tense.
Counsel, only if you're finished. Are you finished?
Yes, thank you. It seems to me you were.
Why isn't your response to Justice Kelly found in 30.20951A?
Your Honor, that's exactly the second response. So the department had...
Thank you for allowing me to segue into the second response.
So as I indicated...
The plain language.
In the department's view, there were two separate statutory bases supporting the amendment here. The solid peers regulation and the condition was one. 30.2095 is the other. So under 2095-2, the department may modify or rescind any permit before its expiration.
And I look at this. I look at 30.2095-1A. as being helpful. Do you have that in front of you, or it looks like you have a lot committed to memory, so maybe you don't need it in front of you. But 1A, as I read the language, the statute provides that permits do not expire unless the pier is not constructed or installed within the 3 years of the permit, unlike a homeowner's construction permit.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. The only indication that a permit would cease to exist, or in the statutory language be void, is if the structure isn't placed within 3 years.
That's because if you timely build it, you get to keep your pier.
You get to keep your pier subject to the permit.
Are you suggesting that there isn't a difference between the word void and the word expiration?
Well, I think the implication between 1A and 1B is that the expiration there refers to voiding. The statutory support for the proposition that there is no expiration for pier permits is that there's none found in the statute. There's no discussion of individual pier permits expiring at any point. The only indication in the statutes of some sort of time limit is this voiding provision. And if the structure is placed in 3 years, the permit does not become void.
But then why wouldn't the legislature in 1A have said that the permit expires unless the activity or project is completed within 3 years? Don't you think the legislature is trying to draw a distinction between void and expiration?
I don't see that distinction, and the legislative history was sparse on that, but the initial draft of this exemption was fairly close to this language and didn't give any indication as to the separate treatment of void versus expiration. I would note, however, that Chapter 30 does include some provisions for which there is an expiration contemplated. 30.20, I think, is the clearest example of an express time limit being provided in the statutes. And 30.20-2A, I believe it is, refers to a five-year time limit on permits for, or rather, contracts for the withdrawal of material from the beds of navigable waters. And in the statutes, there's an express five-year limitation for the withdrawal. Similarly...
I was going to say, why isn't this an enforcement action that we're looking at here? You didn't have to get into whether the pier expired or was void or all those questions. If, in fact, what's going on here interferes with riparian rights of other landowners, the DNR could have brought, or had someone else bring, which I guess is the tussle here, an enforcement action under 30.034A. So why isn't what the DNR did here actually an enforcement action that they should have brought with a fact-finding hearing and all of those protections for the property owner?
Well, I would, first of all, Your Honor, just push back a little bit on the notion that there weren't protections for the property owner here.
Well, there wasn't a hearing where there was fact-finding. There was like a public hearing. That's not what I'm talking about, where there could have been evidence presented on behalf of the landowner and on behalf of the DNR's position, and then the fact-finder would determine what the facts are that are relevant and what the law is. That never happened.
It didn't happen because the Myers waived that hearing. The Myers had the opportunity for a contested case hearing and affirmatively waived that hearing. That's Record 5, Appellate Record 5.
Was this an enforcement action? Is that
no.
what you're saying?
No.
No. Okay. Well, why not? Why isn't it? You're saying that they're not... That you're going to require them to do something with their pier that they didn't do initially. Why isn't that an enforcement action of exercise of the DNR's authority?
So the nature of the permit here, in the DNR's view, this wasn't an enforcement case. An enforcement requires some sort of violation, a violation of the statutes or a violation of a condition. And the way that the condition was written here, it was a grant of authority to the department to do something additional. It wasn't, we can imagine a condition that would be written in such a way that once an event happens, the pier owner comes into violation. So if the condition were written that if siltation gets X high, you shall modify your pier. If they don't modify their pier, then that would be a violation. Here, the way that the condition was written just gave the department authorization to amend the permit. So it wasn't a clear case for an enforcement action.
Now you're back to where we started with my first question, which is, what gives you the authority to put that term in there? I mean, everything talks about the issuance of a permit. That provision in there allows the DNR to issue the permit, but sort of say, you know, we could pull back on that at any time for any reason we deem fit. The statutes discuss an enforcement option if someone's violating a variety of different things. The DNR did not pursue the enforcement action for whatever reason. Now, here's part of the concern. I mean, if they have the authority to do that, okay, then they did it fine. But if they didn't have the authority to do that, then they needed to proceed in another legal manner in which they would try to get the amendment, right? So I'm trying to figure out where their authority comes from to leave that open-ended term and allow them to sort of renege on the deal anytime they want.
The department's position is that the authority for those conditions comes from the authority from the legislature to regulate solid piers, and then
they have the authority to regulate. The legislature gives them the authority to enforce. Where is there a legislative or other grant to put one in that permit?
Well, I again agree that there's not that sort of recursive authorization to impose a condition to enforce the condition. I think that is fairly implied in the ability to include a condition in a permit.
Counselor, what if one wasn't there? Are you still arguing number one in the permit? Would you still make the argument that the DNR had the authority to go back and amend this permit, or are you saying that the authority comes from that condition that they wrote in the permit?
Well, the department would have the authority to amend separately from the condition under 30.2095.
Okay.
That has nothing to do with the condition. The authority to include the condition is what we're saying.
So why do they need the condition? So you're saying to us that these permits for the placement of a structure never expire, and that gives the DNR authority to come back and rescind, change, require amendment under 30.2095, period.
I wouldn't say period in the sense
well,
that they can do
what would prevent a modification? I mean, there's no, under the way you're reading this, even though the structure's already placed, which is what the permit is for, which is the placement of the structure, that permit is endless, infinite, and allows the, and these statutes allow the DNR to change it at any time, to require someone at any time to modify what they originally were granted.
With two qualifications, Your Honor. First, that there's a showing of cause. This isn't just the department saying...
Where do you see the showing of cause be required under 30.2095?
2095 sub 2 says, upon a showing of cause.
For good cause, are
right.
the words.
So it's not that the department has free-ranging authority to change permits. There has to be a showing of cause, and that showing of cause would then be subject to full administrative review rights through a contested case hearing, through judicial review. So this is not sort of shoot from your hip, free-ranging modification authority.
Well, but that's what I think the permit seems to give. There's not a criteria set out in the permit, which is why everyone's asking you, where is the statute that sets the very specific criteria under which the DNR can put this condition in a permit?
And again, the ability to put the condition in the permit, I think, rises and falls entirely separately from the statutory authority to amend a permit. Regardless of how the court lands on whether the department had the authority to impose a condition, the department had the authority under 30.2095 to modify or rescind, subject to good cause. So our position, it sounds like, which isn't getting much purchase, is that 3012-3MD2 is where that authority for imposing conditions comes from. But again, separate from that, there's independent authority under 0.2095. Just briefly like to address the grandfather exemption. I see that I'm close on time here. The language, context, and legislative history of the grandfather exemption indicates that that exemption does not apply to already permitted piers. As we've discussed, 3012-1KCM treats permitted piers separately from the exempt piers under the grandfather exemption, indicating that the legislature was not envisioning permitted piers taking advantage of, if there's some advantage of the...
Regardless of what the legislature envisioned, what they wrote is that a riparian owner of a pier that was placed on the bed of a navigable water before April 17, 2012, is exempt from the permit requirements under this section unless any of the following apply. Do any of the following apply in this case?
Well, I think the looming problem with the Myers arguments about the grandfather exemption is that they never sought to have it apply to their peer. The 1K contemplates a request to the department, and this is 1K sub F, contemplates asking the department to determine if the grandfather exemption applies. There's never been that request for a determination of whether the grandfather exemption applies.
So without a declaratory judgment, you're saying that the owner of a pier that was placed before that date in 2012 cannot invoke the grandfather exception?
I see my light is up.
You can answer the question.
The department's position is not that a declaratory judgment is required. The declaratory judgment would be the remedy if the peer owner wanted to challenge the exemption determination. The exemption determination would likely be made as an administrative determination, but with the distinction of being subject to, and I agree with opposing counsel, that at the time theirs would have been a trial de novo, but now it's a declaratory judgment action. But that's only if the department were to deny if a request had been made.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I'll just jump in on that issue because I've been involved in this for 5 years and council has not. At every step, when we got the letter, when we got the amendment, when we filed, we have always said grandfather exemption applies, and they have always said, no, it doesn't apply, it only applies to permit. So we have consistently asked throughout that the declaratory judgment wasn't the standard that was in or the procedure that was in effect at the time this started to get action on this. What it said was simply that if the department determines you're not entitled to one, you're entitled to a trial de novo on that. And we told the circuit court, we think as a matter of law, we are entitled to the exemptions, but if there's a factual issue, we're entitled to a trial de novo. So that's where that issue is.
Did the Myers waive the contested fact-finding hearing, as counsel had suggested?
For what issue?
Just told that they waived the contested case hearing in response to a question from the Chief Justice.
Not on any enforcement action. What we did was, in order to get up to the circuit court on judicial review, we had a stipulation to say that they weren't going to raise an exhaustion remedies type issues, that we had to go through a contested case hearing to have all of these factual issues before the circuit court case decided the legal issues in this matter. So we have not waived the right. For example, when they talk about factual determinations on whether exemptions apply, we haven't waived the right for a factual determination on those. We've simply said that they can be determined as a matter of law. Let me briefly summarize what I think, after hearing counsel argue, what I think the law is. One, I don't want this court to assume that there's just going to be a wild west and that no permits are required and everyone can do anything. Those permits, after it's constructed, those permits don't require ongoing monitoring or anything of that nature, but those permits still describe what is going to be constructed. The fact you have a permit to build a house doesn't necessarily give you the right to build an attached garage or the right to build an attached porch. The permit doesn't go away. The permit is there, and you only are allowed to place in the navigable waters what you have a permit for. So the permit is there.
So the permit has some life or vitality after construction.
Just like a building permit would. That you only have the right to place on your property that structure. You only have the right to place in the navigable waterways the structure for which you were granted a permit. It has vitality to the sense that if the Myers were to go out and extend it by 15 feet, the permit would still be there for somebody to go look at and say, you don't have the right to place this in the navigable waterways. But it isn't there having ongoing vitality if what that means is that when some DNR official in Spooner decides, I think there's good cause. I think, you know, we should try opening it up wider and having more water come under the pier, and maybe that would solve the problem. They can't do that. And one thing I want to say
So, counsel, would I be correct in saying that the pier permit has continuing vitality in the same form that a home building permit does, in that it is a reference point to determine what the owner had permission to build?
Yes, that's a very good way of stating it.
And that's it.
And with respect to the DNR's authority under 302.952, we can argue about what authority it has and whether that authority is circumscribed when once the permit is completed and it is placed, whether it then has to proceed under 30.03. But the question is, regardless, that's an enforcement action. Whether it is 30.2095 paren 2 saying, we're going to revoke it, we're going to modify it. Whether it is 30.03 saying, we're going to take some other action beyond just fines, we're going to take some sort of action to require you to do something. Those are enforcement actions, and we talk about DNR's own enforcement procedures, which are part of the record, and that what this is a compliance order by DNR. What this is saying is that here's a, what you have to accomplish, here's a schedule to accomplish it, go forth and do this, or if you don't, you're going to be subject to fines. Last 15 seconds. Prior to these exemptions being passed, under 30.03, DNR probably had authority to look into possible infringement of public rights relating to navigable waters and take enforcement action. Exactly what they could do and exactly what protections individuals with permits had is a separate issue. But they are looking, this isn't enforcement, they are looking at violations, the violation of the requirement of the permit that the pier not be detrimental to the public interest. That's the violation. These are enforcement actions. These enforcement actions are barred by the enforcement exemption and grandfather exemption. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, this is quite a case. I've spent a lot of time on it, and I know all my colleagues have spent a lot of time on it as well. Your briefs were very, very helpful, and the argument helpful, too. We are now going to adjourn and take a recess before we begin our third case at 1:30. We are adjourned.